This is James Robertson, Syncom Smalltalk Product Evangelist, bringing you another talk from the European Smalltalk Users Group meeting held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008.
Let's pretend that this is real. Let's say this real.
Here's Lucas Rangley giving a short presentation on Magritte at ESUG 2008.
Having a very short presentation, actually, just 15 minutes, and I have three parts essentially. In the first part, I'm going to talk to make this really efficient, what Magritte is not. So I sometimes hear some rumors what people think Magritte is, so I'm just giving you some keywords about what Magritte is not or what Magritte is not doing. And then I'm going to detail with some facts, so I'm going to tell you what actually can be done or what are the properties of Magritte. And last but not least, if there is enough time, I will show you a quick demo of the key points of Magritte. Okay, so let's directly dive into the rumor part. So what is it not? So first of all, Magritte is not trying to model UML or to think about the class structure and the properties, etc. It's only a way to describe your classes inside the image. Then, as difference to the other frameworks that have been presented this morning, Magritte does not use any code generation. These are all just visitors that walk over the description objects and do something meaningful. And I think, especially this part, is quite powerful. And then, last but not least, but probably the strongest rumor about Magritte is that Magritte has nothing really to do with CSite. Okay, I agree that there is a plugin for Magritte that generates CSite user interfaces from Magritte description. But that's not the central part of it. It can be used for many other things, and you will see in a couple of minutes some more examples. So let's have a look at the details. So this is how I actually see Magritte today. So Magritte is essentially an enhancement to the reflective capabilities of Smalltalk. So you all know that Smalltalk has very strong reflective capabilities. So for example, you can iterate over all the classes existing in the system, and you can look at what variables these classes can define. And with Magritte, you can actually enhance this information. So for example, you can say, yeah, in this variable, expect a type, for example, a string, and I want to give it the label username, so that you can build from this information an actual user interface. And this is very useful, and these are all properties that are not really available just by using the standard print collection. Then another property is that Magritte is very extensible and very open, so any aspect of Magritte can be extended or customized in any way. So for example, extensibility of applications is ensured. So if you define a description or a class, you can always, from a different package, extend this description or modify this description or even remove this description. And that's very powerful. For example, the peer content management system is using this very principle to basically do all the magic with all these plugins that are available there. Then Magritte is self-reflective. So Magritte is described in itself. So you can use Magritte to edit the Magritte meta model. I will show you some more things in the demo. And essentially, that's the result of that, that it's self-reflective. So actually, end users can be enabled to edit certain parts or the whole model of your application on the fly while the application is running. So they use the Muppet editors to edit the Muppet description instead of, as in traditional applications, just the domain model. Then that's probably interesting if you want to use Muppet in your project. So it's open source, it's MIT licensed, and it currently runs on all these platforms, so on Squeak, Firewall, on Syncom Smalltalk, Gemstone Smalltalk, and very recently it has been ported to GNU Smalltalk, because Paolo wants to create user interfaces with GDK automatically, and Muppet seems to give like a good solution to that. So the punchline that I want you to remember is, with Muppet you describe exactly at one place, and you get a functionality everywhere where there is essentially a visitor that walks over these descriptions and takes advantage of these added capabilities. Good, so that brings me already through the demos. I first have some general overview of what I have been doing with Muppet, but there are plenty of plugins available to do other things. I'm not talking about these here. These are just things that I have been doing in open source projects like here and in commercial projects as well. So in one corner, you can use Muppet to build user interfaces. So you can build viewers automatically, for example. You can build editors that edit objects, that validate objects as well before actually committing the changes to the objects. You can build reports. So this all happens automatically. You just load, for example, the Seaside plugin to get this functionality for free for Seaside. Then you can also use it, and that's visible on the upper right corner, to ease the development process in the Smalltalk environment. For example, in Smalltalk you always have these initialize methods, or you have to customize the copying of objects, and that's sometimes a bit annoying to do all the time. So that's why also Muppet supports that kind of thing. So it allows you to define initial values for your objects, for example, or to specify how objects are copied. So when you create a deep copy, sometimes that's quite difficult to decide what you want to copy or what you want to leave out. And then it's last but not least also a means for documentation. So you document your code, you exactly state what an object is meant to do. Then in the lower left corner we have the whole persistency thing. So Muppet can be used to do object relational mapping, or it can be used to map to object databases or several output formats like JSON, XML, or the Moose MSC format. And last but not least, it can be used, for example, to build indexes of objects in object databases, which is, if done manually, quite a cumbersome task. But with Muppet you can do this automatically. And last but not least, and this is the thing that I'm going to show you in the demo, is the end user customizability. So end users are actually able to get their hands onto the Muppet description and change parts or the whole model of your code built through a user interface. And that's what I'm going to show you now. I'm doing this in the peer content management system. Where is the browser? Here it is. Well, let's try to get the resolution. That works. So this is peer. I changed a bit the standard style, so it might not look that familiar, but it's essentially just peer. So if I hit edit here, I get my wiki entry field where I can say hello Jason, and that's it. And of course this form is just built from Muppet description, so there is no code that actually defines these input fields. So for example, when I go here into Squeak and say open peer browser, I get essentially different user interface, but I can go here to that page, and when I click here on edit, I get the same form but not rendered for the web. but rendered for a more diffuse system. So what if I now want to change that form? So for example, I want to add another edit field here, for example, to track my views on this particular page. Well, that's super easy with Magritte. I can just say edit meta. And now I'm actually on the meta level and I'm editing the meta model of this edit command. So here you already see the title field and the level field. I can even edit the existing descriptions even though they are defined in the code, but that would just override the default behavior. And to add now here, for example, a to-do list, I would just choose some decent field and say to-do. There are certain settings that I can choose. For example, I can make it searchable. This will ensure that when I search something here, that page will appear if it appears in the to-do list. Probably not necessary here. You can choose other properties, for example, I can choose the view that is used to display this property. In this case, this is not very interesting, but in some more complex cases, for example, when you have a choice, you can choose between option boxes and drop-down lists, for example. So let's save that. Let's save the meta model, and you see I'm still in the same application, and immediately when I go to edit, I have this new field with my to-do items. I can say clean up. I can save that, and this is automatically persistent and appears again when I edit it again. So that's about what I planned to show you. If there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Yes.
How do you customize layout or relationship between properties and attributes?
Okay, so two questions. The first question, the layout. So I think we are talking about the Seaside plugin, because Magritte doesn't know anything about layout by default. Okay, so here I can actually add CSS classes to description objects that end up as a widget here on the in the form.
So it's not reflected in Magritte, so this is completely separate.
Now that has an extension method on the description. So I extensively use extension methods. And the Magritte packages add actually additional properties to the description objects. And I use a similar mechanism so that you don't need to mix your model and view code. So I can extend descriptions that are defined in the code without actually overriding this method, but by adding an extension method that uses some kind of reflexive trick to modify the other method or the other definition of the description. So this ensures a clean separation of view and model, but the things are still in the same class, just in a different package.
Second part was how you connect between attributes. Is there a relationship?
Actually, that's I think the weakest part of Magritte, how the relationships are built. I honestly must say that I mostly do that by just adding view code by hand. That's quite easy to do. But there is some ready-made stuff here as well, as you see. This is what the standard distribution comes with. So I can, for example, add a 1-to-m relation here. And there are some settings that I can choose here, and it shows then a report of these elements. Or you can choose other components probably to display. So it's quite powerful, but in most cases I made the experience that this is really difficult to do fully automatically, because usually there are a lot of things that you need to customize for your particular case. Other questions?
Yeah. Said you know code generation, where did the new state for the to-do itself?
Dictionaries. So if you want to allow your end users to change the meta model, then you essentially need a dictionary where you can store your values, and you need a place to store the new meta model that overrides the default one that the developer has specified.
Common approach.
Yeah.
Do you find the subclass chains of the visitors naturally cross boundaries. For example, we noticed that the seaside form and the squeak form looked very similar. Is that because one of them subclasses the other in terms of layout, or simply because when building them you naturally follow the same style?
Well, there is a superclass that comes for something reasonable for displaying descriptions that result in some kind of form.
Yeah.
And seaside and morphic display are just two independent subclasses that can also be loaded independently of each other.
Right. I was wondering if you decided you wanted your forms laid out in different way, for example, just some I was thinking of something stupid like breadth first instead of depth first or something like that, would it be easy to push that change across the whole thing, or should I expect to see our subclass tree, a separate subclass tree of the superclass and then the morphic one, the...
Yeah, that's not too easy just to create any layout, so... This is the default that you get if you do nothing, if you don't apply any style sheet. And now since all these elements essentially have style sheets, you can, in the style sheet, rearrange them quite freely.
Yeah.
And also, this part here, the functionality actually, this can be just replaced by a different component.
Yeah.
By a different seaside component, either from Magritte or you write it yourself.
Yeah.
And then you can custom it for yourself. Or then in the worst part, if you really want to have this element there and the other one somewhere totally different, then you can just create your own visitor that knows how to go over this and how to do the layout.
I was wondering if you were, do you find yourself being taken to the situation of breaking up the visitor into maybe a number of things that delegate to each other, or maybe for future, or you think no, that's not a way to go?
Well, I've never had that issue.
It's never been a problem.
It was always solvable using CSS or custom visitor.
Yeah. No need to go there until it...
But if you have a particular problem, you can show it to me, then we can discuss how this could be solved.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that talk from ESUG 2008, held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008. If you did, head on over to syncomsmalltalk.com and check out the podcast area. We have a weekly podcast and lots more content where this came from. You can also send feedback to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can head on over to the Industry Misinterpretations Group on Facebook, the Smalltalkers Group at Ning. You can head on over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. And of course, you can go to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for us.